At this time, unwax your ears as the most powerful men in Canada discuss top tech. This week, software updates.
That was awesome, Paige.
That never gets old, does it?
I have to like move my chin in a weird way to cause it to always come out wrong.
So, Ian, you were going to tell us your thoughts on updating software.
What a segue, Johnny.
I wrote that down.
As may or may not be known, we actually record this show months, weeks in advance of when it actually gets aired. And just recently, we were all sitting patiently in front of our computers watching the new WWDC from Apple, the Worldwide Developer Conference, unveil what we're going to be installing on our computers in the next few months with macOS 10 Lion and iOS 6. And I thought it would be a really good time to actually tell our audience about when and when not to update.
Yeah. I like the idea that we are suggesting a course of non-action.
If you're a tech nerd, you'll probably have somebody you know saying, hey, install this new beta of iOS 6. Don't do that, first off.
That's a good plan. Avoid beta software. That is always a good starting point.
If you're like most of our audience that's listening to this on the radio and you have a jailbroken iPhone, then don't do that either. Yeah, the hundreds of millions of you who are jailbreaking your iPhones, don't install iOS 6 just yet. It'll destroy your jailbreak, yes.
And for those of us who have no idea what we're talking about, for the most part, when your computer pops up saying, hey, we've got new software for you, would you like to update?
I don't know why Ian's computer is Russian, but I love it.
Because it's been taken over by Russian mafia bots.
It's generally a good idea to update your software on a regular basis.
Yeah, there's very few situations where it's a bad idea to not accept that for security reasons and for compatibility. Generally, your computer knows when it's a good time to upgrade.
So, hey, let's talk about the situations where it's not a good idea. For example,
one issue that I've just come into recently, someone had an older version of the operating system and they were getting updates to their browser. And eventually the browser update, Firefox in this case, updated to a newer version than what could be used by the operating system they had. So that became kind of problematic. So the idea really is that you need to be updating your operating system and all the components of your system and not just your software in order so that it all will work together. And sometimes you will run into this problem where you have to roll back to an earlier version, which can be a little bit awkward and a little bit difficult. But that was a problem I just ran into recently. The most recent version of Firefox will not work with macOS 10.4, but it will work with 10.5. So this person downloaded version 13, I think, of Firefox, and then it erased version 3 that she was running and had to be replaced. So it's a good idea to keep all those system updates and your software updated as well.
Maybe a better way of dealing with this actually is to actually read the release notes that come with your updates.
That's true. I always like to see what's actually getting updated whenever I update something new, and that's because a lot of times on iOS devices, when a new version of something is released, if it's what we call a point release. And I should explain what that is. A point release is where you might have a major version of something, version like Firefox has version 12 and version 13 and version 14. If they release a point release, something like 13.1 or 13.2, we call that a point release because it's not a full major release with a whole bunch of new bells and whistles. It just means that we fixed some minor issues. Whenever you see a new release come out, it's always kind of nice just to see what are they going to fix. Are they going to fix my problem? I use Linux, for example. Reading the release notes, or a change log, as they call it, for Linux would be ridiculous because there's always hundreds and hundreds of new features and bug fixes and tiny little things that mean nothing to me. So I don't always check to see, you know, what's new in Linux. But being able to look at an app and find out that, oh, well, they moved from version 1 to version 2, and now they're going to introduce a new streaming solution for your music, or now they're going to put ads in the program where there were no ads before. Knowing those kind of things can sometimes help you decide whether you want to actually update your software or not.
That's a really good point. My wife has a couple of ebook software applications that she really likes on her iPad and her iPhone, and this would be the same in many devices. But Apple changed a little over a year ago, they changed the rules about in-app purchases. So an in-app purchase is when you buy something through the application as opposed to buying it through a website or some other exterior service. And so they changed it so that you have to pay Apple a percentage of anything that you sell through your application to your customers as opposed to what they normally got as a percentage of just the purchase of the application, and then anything that was bought through the application after that was yours to keep. Well, now they've said, no, no, you have to pay us our cut. And a lot of the application developers said, you know what? We're just going to remove that feature because we don't want to give Apple the 30%. And ebook resellers are the biggest one because if they didn't even have a 30% markup in the first place, so 30% to Apple would mean they'd be losing money. And so Kobo, for example, removed that feature. But you can still use it if you've got the old version of the software. So she purposely makes sure she does never update her Kobo software so she can continue to use that feature that she likes anytime she wants. Click on a book and search for it in Kobo and pay for it in Kobo, and then it downloads in Kobo and she reads it right away in Kobo, so she doesn't have to go to another service in order to get what she wants. It doesn't happen a lot. As you said, Beach, sometimes you run into something like adding ads or getting rid of a feature that you currently like. So it's good to keep that up. The great thing about iPhone and iPad apps and probably Android apps as well is they're relatively small and new compared to applications on your computer. And so those release notes and change logs are actually usually pretty short, and you can usually figure them out fairly easily. They're actually not written for other programmers. They're actually written for customers.
Yeah, they're written for human beings, actually.
But one of the other points that's important is I mentioned putting ads into something, and it sounds like that would be something that would come in on mobile, because that's where we're seeing a lot more advertising is on iOS devices or on Android devices, basically on your phone you're carrying around with you. New apps will mean, oh yeah, we're going to start putting ads in here now, or in some cases they'll take ads out. This is also happening to people who update things on their desktop. Skype now on one-to-one audio calls only. It's the Windows client. They will start embedding ads during the audio chat. And that seems really weird to us because up until now, Skype has been very friendly in terms of not putting in ads, not trying the big upsell. This is now something they're doing for their Windows client. It seems weird, but it is something that's going to, I think, happen a lot more on the desktop too. You're going to start getting software that is going to have ads embedded in it.
Ad-supported software, yeah.
And I mean, it's a different topic, but it is something to be aware of.
Well, this isn't necessarily a reason not to upgrade, though, quite frankly.
That's true.
What we really need to worry about is, let's say you're doing a project, a really important project, either for work or for school or just for yourself, and, oh, there's a new operating system available. It might not even be a free upgrade, but maybe you just want it. Don't do it.
Yes.
Not until you're finished your project, because no matter what you do beforehand to actually read the release notes and try and check incompatibilities, something might happen that's different between the new software that you want to use and the software you're currently using, which may cause things to stop working and make you unable to finish your project.
The only reason to ever upgrade when you're in the middle of a big project like that, either upgrade the software that you're using for the project or the operating system of the system that you're working on the project, and the only reason to do an upgrade is if something isn't working and that you're well aware that that upgrade will fix that thing that you need to get your project done. And that happens very, very rarely. And this was actually instilled in me when I was a video editor. That is the biggest thing. Video editors are paranoid. They turn system updates off. They won't update browsers. They won't update anything if they're in the middle of a project. And actually, often video editing stations, they'll disconnect them from the network. They are paranoid about potentially something interrupting them when they're in a big project.
Until they've got about a week to figure out how they can make their machine get back to a status that they can use it at.
And in a lot of cases, I mean, here's a more technical thing. There's been talk of doing things like system restore points, which is something built into Windows for one thing. There's also the idea of doing a disk image, a bit-for-bit copy of your disk.
That's what I was going to ask you, Beej, actually. Dandiani, what happens when you do an update and things don't work out the way you wanted them to?
And it always depends on the size of the update, right? If you're doing a full operating system upgrade, if you're going from Windows XP to Windows 7, thus passing Windows Vista, which I recommend, but you do something like that, you might not be able to back that off. That's when you would be thinking about, before doing such a big upgrade, is doing something like a disk image, where it's a bit-for-bit copy of your hard drive, and saying that now I have that, I have a bit-for-bit copy of my entire hard drive backed up somewhere, and I know that I can restore from that. That means having to buy more software, put in more time, but it also means that you are using your backup solution, which is something we've talked about before. Always a good idea to have a backup solution.
The Apple Time Machine software, you can restore from previous states from that. If you're an Apple user, I highly, highly, highly recommend getting an external drive and doing Time Machine backups to that, because not only is it great for accidentally deleting a file or, you know, something getting corrupted, this possibility of restoring from a previous version of the whole operating system is granted to you. And also it means that if something happens to your computer, say for instance your computer is stolen or destroyed and you can't get any data off of that and you've got this Time Machine backup, you can take a brand new computer, plug in that external drive that you've been doing dutifully automated background backups on, and actually restore the latest version of your operating system with all the files and applications to this brand new computer through the wizard that comes up. Well, I guess I shouldn't use that word. That's very Microsoft word, wizard. But through the process of...
The sorcerer.
The mage that comes up at the beginning of when you're doing your first time with your new Macintosh.
The cleric was there.
I remember your first time, Beach. Anyway, it'll restore your backup on the computer, the new computer from that. You can use third-party software like Carbon Copy Cloner, and I'm sure there's a lot of Super Duper.
Super Duper is a fantastic... The point is, make sure you have some sort of backup system, and if it's an important program you use, do a backup, do a manual backup before you actually upgrade this software.
Yeah. It never hurts to have good backups.
It doesn't hurt.
And to be clear as well, I mean, the corollary to what Johnny, you were saying earlier about doing updates to software and trying to do everything in step, the corollary to that is that doing an OS update is always not a good idea either. Because as we found with macOS 10.7, which was Lion, which is the most recent version, people were upgrading to Lion because it was a $30 upgrade, which is a huge deal. It's, you go to the Mac App Store, you pay your $30, you get a brand new version of the operating system to install on your system. And to anyone who's from the Windows world hearing about that, that would be like Microsoft saying, oh yeah, you can just pay us $30 for a copy of Windows 7. Essentially, that's what was going on there.
And what do they normally charge? It's like over $100 for,
yeah,
for a copy of Windows.
Oh, for Windows? Oh God, you're in the multi-hundred.
120... almost 200, depending on what version of it that you want, if you want like Home Premium or Ultimate or Professional or and just anyway. But the point is that people moved to OS 10.7 and it broke some applications. Well, it didn't break the applications. The applications weren't updated enough to run on that version of the operating system. And you might think, well, why is that? It's because operating systems have a bunch of little hooks in them that the applications say, I need to plug into all these hooks. They're called APIs. Sometimes those APIs get changed, they get removed from the system, they say we're not using these anymore. So if those hooks aren't there, and the application tries to run looking for a hook, it can't find it. It can't find it, it won't run. This is not just the only thing. At work, we have a program that we have to run that only runs on Windows XP. Apparently cannot install it on Windows 7, because that's how it is. On Linux, cripes. Ian, how many times have we wanted to do a podcast and I said, sure, just wait a second, I'm just going to update my Linux system, and then you've cursed me out for a week. Every time I do an update on my Linux system, it's like rolling the dice, because you never know what's going to happen. I did one today, and I was like, I know I have a podcast, but screw it, I'll install a new version of my...
You are a bad, bad person.
I'm a terrible man, I don't practice what I preach.
If you're going to be a Linux user, you might as well be a medical doctor, because you really need to know about the interactions of enough different things that it's like medicine.
Yeah. So both things are true. If you're on an old version of your OS and you're trying to run the latest software, you're not going to have good interactions. If you're running older software and you're trying to run a new version of an operating system, you may not have a good interaction either. I always believe it's a good idea, if you have two computers, update one at a time and see which one, you know, if you're actually able to update to both. And if you can't do that because you only have one computer at home, wait a week, maybe even wait a month and just see what's happening. See if anyone else is having a problem using the same stuff you're using and then do the update.
But let's not scare people too much. Good, reliable upgrade cycle will protect your computer and your activities on your computer from all sorts of potential malicious stuff. A lot of updates are not new features or even often bug fixes. A lot of updates are security-based updates that patch holes in software that malicious code can exploit and do all sorts of terrible things.
So then what are some examples of security updates then?
Well, the most perfect example is when you do a software update on Mac OS X and I believe on Windows as well, and it actually calls it a security update. That's really obvious. So always do those. If it says something about security in the update, I would recommend do that right away. But often
antivirus programs.
Yes. always keep your antivirus program up to date. There's very little chance that updating your antivirus program will cause a problem with something else. Although, going back to Ian's earlier point, update nothing during the middle of a big project.
Can I just make it really easy for you?
Please do. We love it, Uncle Ian, when you make things easy for us.
Think. Just think. Don't blindly click the upgrade button every time it shows up, and don't ignore it. Sit down, read the
What you really mean is read.
Yeah. Well,
like,
yeah.
And that's it's hard for us in our digital society when we are inundated with messages, and for especially for new computer users, wondering what stuff is system based and what is application based and what is maybe real and what they've been told about fake messages. You know, there's that whole school of malicious websites that do fake messages that pop up at you and say, just click on this to do a software update. You need to do a software update. And it's actually, in fact, not a software update. It's an injection of malicious code onto your computer. But be wary of any websites that ask you to run updates. But if it's your operating system itself or the applications you're in that are asking to do updates, that's a lot more safe. As Ian said, read and think about what those things are. If you can, often you can click on them and read more information, and it'll tell you, as Beach said earlier on, what are some of the things that are added in this update. Apple does that.
So that's step one. Step two, make a backup.
That is also a very good step.
Mm-hmm.
Step three, don't be afraid. Generally, go ahead.
The difference between people that are turned to for tech advice and technicians in general and those that need help with computers has a lot to do with confidence and a lack of fear of technology. And I don't mean that to be an insult in any way. It's hard to learn that. But there's a certain point that if you know you have good backups, you can be pretty sure that nothing you do to your computer is going to be so bad that you can't come back from it.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got good backups, you can be confident in messing things up on your computer, that you can mess things up and that you can come back from that.
Yeah, the people I teach, whenever I talk to them about learning to use a computer, and they always use their favorite phrase that, oh, well, I'm computer illiterate, which is, I've always felt like, not like it's a cop-out, but it's always a way to say that I'm not prepared to learn this, but even though I'm here to learn it, I just don't think that whatever you're going to say to me is going to stick. I actually point blank tell them, I'm not trying to teach you to learn your computer, I'm trying to teach you the confidence to not fear it.
Ed, that is a really good way of looking at it. And I think that that is also a bit of a pet peeve for me, people who say they're computer illiterate, because everyone has to learn sometime. No one comes into this world, despite what some people think about the youth of our day knowing technology instinctively, no one comes into this world knowing this stuff. Everyone has to learn it. And it's true, some people learn it better than others, and some people have more interest in learning it than others. But anyone can learn how to use the technology. And just because you don't know it doesn't mean you can't. And that can be a bit of a defense mechanism. Oh, I'm just not computer literate. And it's like, yeah, but you can be. You know, when you were young, you couldn't read a book, but you learned. Yeah. You learned how to be literate. You know, if you couldn't figure out what a word meant, you could ask someone or look it up in a dictionary. You can do the exact same thing with technology. It's not as scary as everyone thinks.
You not only have to upgrade your software, but upgrade your mind.
I would say skills, but I like upgrade your mindset, update your mindset a bit. Computers are way more safe and way easier to use than they have been in a very, very long time.
Fantastic. So with that, for the most powerful men in Canada, my name is Ian Horner.
I'm Johnny Blakeborough.
And I'm Brendan Beach-Deary, currently recompiling his Linux kernel.
We'll see you next time.
The most powerful men in Canada would love to hear from you. Please contact us by visiting our website at toptech.tiltyhouse.com if you have any comments or if there are any subjects you'd like us to cover in a future show.